This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Tamar Jacoby. She is president and CEO of Immigration Works USA, a major group in American politics, and we will talk with her about this simmering issue on the political scene in our country. Tamar Jacoby, a former editor of the op-ed page of the New York Times, who is now an activist on immigration. Also on the show, two ministers in this community who have been around for more than 30 years. On the left, Steve Crump, the pastor at the Unitarian Church on Goodwood Boulevard, and David Diamond, the longtime pastor of the Redeeming Word of Life Church. They have different thoughts about Governor Jindal's speech in California in which he denounced President Obama, saying that this president is denying Americans their religious liberty. We'll talk about it with David Diamond and Steve Crump. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. And you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. In studio with Tamar Jacoby, known for her writing on immigration-related issues, and she is president and CEO of Immigration Works USA. She is at Louisiana State University today for a couple of events, and we'll talk about those before she parts company with us this morning. But she has a big topic, and she is one who has worked in this realm for some time. Today, by the way, 3:30 at the Hill Memorial Library, you can hear more from our fascinating guest. Good morning, Tamar Jacoby.
Good morning.
Nice to talk with you.
Nice to be
this
here.
This is a huge issue right now. What's going on regarding immigration?
Well, for about a decade, Congress has been trying to pass a bill that would reform lots of different aspects of it, make enforcement tougher and make the legal immigration system work better and come up with some answer for the 11 or 12 million unauthorized immigrants in the U.S. And Congress has been trying to do it for about a decade. And this spring, we thought maybe we were close. Now, you know, that broken Washington, it's not clear we are close, but they're working on it.
What is the biggest stumbling block?
Well, that's the House Republicans don't want to give Obama a victory, and they're afraid to go back to their voters at primary time. Most Americans are for immigration reform, but there's a small faction that's against it, and they play a big role in Republican primaries.
And is there any room for compromise? This is an election year.
We work with House Republicans in general, and House Republicans in particular, have been getting closer to an answer for quite a long time now. And some of us thought they were almost there a few weeks ago. So there is some still hope of compromise, I would say.
We're visiting with Tamar Jacoby. She is not only president and CEO of Immigration Works USA, she has been involved in many endeavors through her years. Writing has appeared in places like The Nation, The New Republic, The Washington Post, The New York Times Book Review, The Los Angeles Times, and her 1998 book, Someone Else's House, America's Unfinished Struggle for Integration, tells the story of race relations in three American cities, New York, Detroit, and Atlanta. Is this issue, is it about race?
For some people, it's about race. I think ultimately it's about the shrinking world, and we actually need these workers. And the question is, can we deal with people who are other? We need them to come and work, and can we deal with them even though they're different? So in race, yes, race and culture. Race would make it a little too simple.
There is a concern by the Republican Party, I think, that if these people become legal, then that would mean there are many more Democratic voters in the United States. Is that a reality?
Immigrants are the fast, Latinos in particular, are the fastest growing voting bloc in America. They now could be as much as they're now about 10%. They could be closer to 20 or more in a couple of decades. Who they vote for is really going to matter. They're not all going to vote Democrat, and what Republicans need to do is start to compete for them. So yes, Republicans are afraid that many of them will vote Democrat, but if Republicans don't start competing, they have no chance that any of them are going to vote Republican, and then Republicans won't survive if they don't have any Latinos. Already, it's hard to win the presidency without Latino votes.
You say that there are 11 or 12 million, and I've heard that figure in many places, unauthorized immigrants in the United States living here as we speak, some in our midst right now, in this community. In fact, if you look outside at the parking lot, we're in Corsi Boulevard, you'll see some in the parking lot of Home Depot right now. What happens if they all go home or forced to go home?
They're not going to all go home. That's the point. That's the fantasy is that they might all go home. Many have lived here more than a decade. Many are married to U.S. citizens. Many have U.S. citizen kids. They're not going to go home. And it would be bad for us if they went home because they do a lot of jobs that we need done.
How do we get to that figure of 12 million?
There's demographers who count. It's one of the few issues that the two sides agree on. The two sides disagree on just about everything else, how good they are for the economy, how this, how that. The one thing pretty much everyone agrees on, there's about 11 or 12 million unauthorized.
And that's close to 4% of the American population. We've got 300 million people. If we got 12 million, we're getting close to 4%.
But the key is they do jobs. They're concentrated. The unauthorized ones are concentrated on very low-end jobs, farms, construction work, meat processing, janitorial, that lots of Americans don't want to do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though it's a small percent, they fill very important niches. Because think of it, if you don't have anyone to pick your crops, mm-hmm. you're probably going to start growing your crops in Mexico, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't have anyone to wash the dishes in the restaurant, you probably don't expand, and then you don't hire another chef.
Right. A question from a listener, Amy. She asks, how many of these illegals are working as housekeepers and in other duties, having other duties in members of Congresses, in homes of the members of Congress.
Touché. Members of Congress watch pretty carefully because they know that if they get found out, it doesn't help with your reelection. So probably not too many from members of Congress.
But remember, I can recall in 1993 when President Clinton, remember, he appointed Janet Reno Attorney General, but it was after two others
who went down in flames
over this issue.
Sure. Well, the trouble is, so usually what happens is people come and they have actually fake documents, right? Most people don't come and say, "Hi, I'm illegal, hire me." They come and they show mm-hmm. you a Social Security card and a driver's license that look pretty good. And most people look at that and you can only ask so many questions. So very few people are deliberately hiring unauthorized people.
But these folks are working in some places, otherwise they wouldn't be able to live.
They're here to work. They're here to work. If you're going to be unemployed, it's a lot better to be unemployed in Mexico. It's cheaper, it's warmer, you have family and friends. They come to work.
And my guess is that many of them are not working for $7.25
an
hour. No,
but that's the point. See, many of them, the overwhelming majority, we believe, even Social Security Administration, believes are working for more than the minimum wage. Because they don't, again, come and say, "Hi, I'm illegal, pay me whatever you want." They say, "Hi, here's my driver's license, here's my Social Security card." And most employers treat them as they treat their other employees. They pay the taxes, they pay the withholding, they pay the going wage.
And that's a smart thing.
And the point is, the point about the American workforce is that the American workforce has changed dramatically since, 20 or 30 years since we were young. It used to be that half of all the Americans in the workforce were high school dropouts. Now, less than 10% of the Americans in the workforce are high school dropouts. And we still have some jobs for high school dropouts. That's why immigrants are so helpful and so important.
297-5633 is your number. Tamar Jacoby is the guest, and she'll be at LSU's Hill Memorial Library for another appearance this afternoon at 3:30. Her career has been marked by an outspoken advocacy for policies that would liberalize America's immigration laws. She believes in a policy shift to maintain the economic growth of the United States, and if the passage of a broad guest worker program would become a reality, how would this affect the economy?
Well, again, so think about the guy who runs the restaurant here in Baton Rouge, and he already owns two or three, and he wants to open another one. But if he can't find people to do the dishwashing and the busboy job, he can't open another restaurant. If he can find people to do the dishwashing and the busboy, he opens another restaurant, he hires a chef, he hires waiters, it's more work for an architect, it's more work for the janitor service. So these are low-end workers, but they help grow the economy because they do jobs that not many Americans want to do anymore.
David on Government Street. David, good morning. You're on the air with Tamar Jacoby. Hi, David.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Really enjoy the show. And this is an issue I think that's really important for especially Louisiana. As a company, we try to hire Americans to do the work that we do. This past season, we set up 100 interviews. Only 15 Americans showed up. We have a real problem hiring Americans to do the work that we do. It's the soft skills that they're missing. We use the H-2B visa program out of necessity. And these guys are, and I really think the Republicans are missing the point here, is that most of these folks that come here, they're really conservative in their values. These are good families that are coming here, and many of them are just trying to work to make enough money for their families. The Republicans, I believe, are really missing the boat here. And the opportunity to reform the immigration program helps companies like mine. And it also helps the country, you know, getting these undocumented above and onto the radar and paying their taxes, I think is critically important. This issue is not going away. I was recently in Washington, and there's a tremendous amount of effort for this. As your guest mentioned, we thought we had some movement toward getting this reform package passed. And it's just the right thing to do. And Americans, nothing would make me happier than to hire Americans to do these jobs. They're just not willing to do it anymore.
Yeah, amen. I mean, it's not, and we're not saying, I agree with every word you said, and we're not saying that Americans are lazy. We're not saying that there's anything wrong with Americans. It's good that Americans are more educated. So now people graduate from high school, and they go to maybe the community college, or they go to college, and they don't want to work at doing landscaping or in a meat processing plant or on a farm. And that means the country's more educated. That's good. And we're lucky that there's some hardworking people next door who want to come and do it. We ought to make it possible for them to come legally.
297-5633. Thank you, David. Tamar Jacoby with us for a bit longer. Gaston on Highland Road. Gaston, you're on the air with Tamar.
Hey, Tamar. I think you're kind of painting a broad brush. I have to agree with some of the things you say, but I personally went to Home Depot to try and get a couple guys to help me to take up some floor, and I offered them $10 an hour, you know, $80 for 8 hours, and they were like, no, that's not enough. So you got to realize that legal workers here are being held back because they have, and not just legal workers, but American citizens are being held down with the minimum wage and being undocumented. Not only are they making more than minimum wage, but they're also getting paid cash and not paying taxes.
Well, nobody's the minimum wage is a minimum. It's not a maximum, right? It doesn't hold anyone down. But I mean,
yes, it does.
Well,
big corporations like McDonald's will not pay anything above minimum wage.
Okay, but so
initially,
the guys at Home Depot, they could only ask for more if they thought they were worth more, and you would pay more. If you could find an American for $7.25, I assume you'd hire him.
Well, they do. But I think the point that I really would like to make is that we need Americans that know how to do carpentry and know how to do horticulture and pay those people what they're worth. And we're losing quality, skilled labor because we're just importing cheap cash paid.
Yeah, well, look, I agree that we should train. There should be a lot more job training for Americans for all kinds of jobs, from construction to horticulture to culinary, whatever. The trouble is a lot of Americans want to go to college, and they don't necessarily, they think jobs in restaurants and meat processing and in the fields are beneath them. And, you know, that's what it is. I mean, can we change the culture so that people think that being a carpenter is a dignified job? It'd be great if we could. But right now, that's not really what the culture says. And Mexicans think that being a carpenter is a great job. And let's not generalize, right? There's some great American carpenters, too. But, you know, the big numbers, Americans want to work inside, not with their hands.
Agree. I think Mississippi's got one step ahead of us by providing 13th and 14th education for free for people. Anyhow, thanks a bunch.
Thank you,
Interesting
Gaston.
Comments.
297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, 877-217-5757. Tamar Jacoby with us for a bit longer. The Economist calls our guest a beacon of light in a foggy debate, and today at 3:30 she will be expounding upon the remarks made this morning. She'll be at the Hill Memorial Library, by the way, one of the great jewels at LSU. There's even a display of General William Tecumseh Sherman, the founder of Louisiana State University. Did you know that, Tamar?
I did not. That makes it all the more interesting. I'm a big admirer of General Sherman. That's great. I had no idea.
Well, at LSU, there has been reluctance to name a building in his honor, although the great Confederate General Edmund Kirby Smith has a building named in his honor. at LSU.
Maybe I shouldn't say on the air in Louisiana that I'm an admirer of Sherman.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. The fascinating and eloquent Tamar Jacoby is with us. She grew up in New York City, lives in Washington, D.C., where she is CEO and president of Immigration Works USA. How long has this organization been in place?
Since
2007. And before that, she worked in many places, including the New York Times. And I would like to ask you a little bit about that. You were the deputy editor of the op-ed page, 1981 to 87.
Be careful, you're going to reveal how many gray hairs I have.
Well,
I can't see it on the radio.
it works for you. It works for you. But who were the columnists in those days?
Tony Lewis and yeah. William Sapphire.
Some giants.
I'm going to forget some of the others. I think Reston was gone by the time I was there. I can't remember.
At one time, it's hard to believe, but the New York Times did not have an op-ed page.
That's true. I wasn't the very beginning days, but I was kind of early on. And the idea, there was the first op-ed page in the country, and the idea was the editors of the paper have been speaking at you and telling you their opinion, but what do you all think? And so it was an opportunity to get some people outside the paper to have their voices. And early on, it wasn't clear whether that meant the housewife from the Bronx who had a view on the news, or whether it meant just an expert who wasn't part of the staff of the paper who had a view on the news. And when we were running it, we kind of had both. We would have the housewife on the Bronx have her view, but also Henry Kissinger.
Yeah. Who's the best newspaper columnist you've ever read?
Oh, that's a really hard question. People, you know, that's a really, really, really hard
question.
Can
you name two or three?
Well, I mean, I think David Brooks is a really good columnist, and I think Samuelson is a really good columnist, writes about the economy, and you probably have your favorite.
Well, sure, we all do. We all do. My favorite was Mike Royko.
Well, there you go.
But he's been gone now for 17 years.
Yeah.
297-5633 is your number. And Charles on North Foster, you are on the air with Tamar Jacoby. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Tamar. I want to say this. We talked about immigration reform. We have to look at it from two sides of the coin. There's a national issue and there's a local issue. I'll give you two examples. Locally, we built a $17 million Claiborne Elementary right here in my community in North Baton Rouge. My brother-in-law, who is a master brick mason, couldn't get a job with the contractor because all of the brick masons were foreign workers. Now, for whatever reason, our local school board didn't put in the contract to hire Americans first. And this is not a profession that Americans don't want to do the work. The other one is, if we're going to focus all of our immigration efforts on Latinos, what about Europeans who are waiting legally? What about Africans who are waiting legally? And what about the Haitians who were not allowed to immigrate after one of the worst human disasters in our hemisphere? So how can we call this fair immigration reform? And I'll listen for your guest comments and answers. Thank you.
Yeah, those are really interesting questions. I mean, I definitely agree that employers should always have to try to hire Americans first. And that's one of the ideas of in reform, right? So right now, a lot of people come every year illegally to do these low-end jobs. And part of those of us who are pushing for reform are saying, let's replace that illegal flow with a legal flow. So instead of just walking across the border and going to Home Depot, you'd get a visa and you'd come to work. And the employer, before he could hire you, he couldn't just go down to the Home Depot. He'd actually have to try to hire an American first and prove it. And I think that's one of the important parts of reform. I mean, I believe we need the immigrant workers, but I sure think employers ought to have to try to hire Americans first. If they can, great. If they can't, it ought to be easy to get an immigrant legally. So I'm with you on that one. On the countries they come from, the actual fact is every country in the world has a similar quota every year. There's a similar quota for how many family members can come and a similar quota for how many workers can come from that country. And so actually from Haiti, it's a lot easier to come than it is from Mexico because not that many people are trying to come from Haiti compared to Mexico. And certainly from Europe, it's really easy to come because not that many people want to come from Europe. But you're right that after the disaster in Haiti, those would have been refugees. See, the quota would have gotten filled up really fast. Those people wanted to come as refugees. And I'm not sure exactly what went wrong, that there weren't enough refugees. But it's not because we don't allow people from other countries to come. We do, actually.
You are from New York, live in Washington, educated at Yale. Do you find that people in the Northeast may have, on the whole, a different opinion about this issue than people who live in this region?
What people think about this is how fast the immigration grew recently. So in California, where there's been a lot of immigrants for a long time, people are not so upset about it anymore. In Georgia, where 30 years ago there were no immigrants and it grew really fast, people are unnerved by the change. And I'm sort of guessing, I don't know enough about Louisiana, but I'm guessing it falls more into that category. It's not because it's the South. Mm-hmm. It's because there weren't many immigrants 20, 30 years ago, and it grew very fast.
Should we build a fence from one end of the southern United States to the other?
You know, whatever we do, whatever bill there is, there's going to be some fence. There's going to be some more border guards. There's going to be some enforcement like that. The real way to get control takes three things: not just a fence, not just checking at the workplace. You got to check at the workplace. Is that guy legit? Do you have to look at a card and swipe a card through a system and check a card against a computer, make sure the guy's really legal to work? But you have to combine all that again with a legal way for people to get here, because if you don't have a legal way for the workers to get here, all the enforcement in the world is not going to work.
You were a supporter of President Bush's guest worker legalization plan. President Bush, some would say, was progressive on this issue. His party did not agree with him, though, for the most part.
The Republican Party is split about this. I'm a Republican. The Republican Party is divided about immigration. They're the ones who see that we really need to do it, that it's good for the country. Reagan understood it was good for the country, for goodness sake. But then there's some who are afraid of it. Democrats are split too, actually. But Republicans are a little more split, and the ones who are hesitating to do reform now tend to be more Republicans.
It would seem, without some kind of Republican consensus on this, though, this plan's not going to go anywhere.
That's right, but I think we're going to have Republican consensus within the year. I mean, I think there's, as I said earlier, Republicans have been warming to this, moving more toward it gradually, a step forward, two steps back, a step forward. We've come to the point where the debate in the Republican Party is not do we do it or not, it's when do we do it. And I think they might not get to it this year, but I think there's a pretty good chance they'll get to it before 2016, because they see that Latino voters, it's important to do it because mm-hmm. the country needs it, but they also see that Latino voters, we're not going to win the presidency again unless we take this off the table with Latino voters. So I think Republicans are going to get to it, you know, sooner or later. We hope sooner.
This is one of those issues, though, that has currency in the American political scene, on the scene. It affects elections, and elections are precious to those who hold office. So how can this be a winner for candidates running for office?
Well, again, there's only about... Every poll shows, you poll over the years, it's about 20% of the public that's dead set against it. Only 20%. The problem is, in a Republican primary, 20% can make a big difference.
It's kind of like gun control or gun rights, whatever.
A small percentage can hang it up.
Because they're the most passionate.
But they
contribute.
Exactly. But more and more, again, I think the argument is, we're making headway with the argument. Republicans, again, see that we'll never see the inside of the White House until we get it off the table. And so Republicans are torn between, you know, what they know is good for the country, what they know is good for the economy, some primary voters, and the presidential election. And I'm, you know, what all of us are hoping is that that equation, as more and more businesses, you know, look at Mark Zuckerberg, you know, has now made a national crusade out of immigration reform. As more and more voices like that, and evangelical ministers are now making a crusade out of immigration reform. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that gradually the politics are shifting.
I want to take you back a little bit. I think you wrote this when you were a teenager.
Uh-oh.
1974. What happened to racial integration in the United States? That was something written by our guest Tamar Jacoby that won a journalism fellowship. What was the focus of your writing in 1974 on this issue?
Well, I don't remember 1974, but I did write a book in the 90s about whatever happened to integration.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what I asked then was, what happened to the dream? And I wasn't talking about immigrants then. I was talking about blacks and whites.
Right.
And I was asking, whatever happened to the idea that, you know, we're really, that what we have in common is more important than our differences, and we're one country. You know, before community meant black community and white community, when Martin Luther King used to use the term, he meant beloved community meant everything. everyone getting along. And so I wrote a book about that, and I asked, like, how did we lose that idea? And I looked at three cities, and my answer was it took blacks and whites, liberals and conservatives, for us to let go of that idea and slip into the what I think is kind of the easier idea that our group is the most important thing about us, as opposed to what we all have in common.
Okay. You also worked in the New York Times office in the review section. You were a staffer in the review of books. That's one of the places it also is legendary to be received in the United States as a, quote, serious author. You usually have to have a review by the New York Times.
You're digging up my past.
How was that experience?
It was a great experience. I worked for the New York Review of Books. So I worked at the Times. I worked at the Op-Ed Page. My journalism was a lot of fun. But you know, I've switched in recent decades from journalism to working in Washington because you know it's fun to be a journalist. It's fun to you know think about what it all means. But it's also really fun to be there in Washington trying to make it happen. I have a checkered past. Let's put it that way.
Well, Washington is a great city, but it's much different than New York.
That's true.
And you've been there for a while.
I miss New York, but they don't have Congress in New York.
Well, you're not too far away. And some people don't think Congress is doing a very good job. When we do these polls, invariably, Congress way behind the president.
Yeah, Congress is not doing a very good job. Washington is broken, but when you're there and you're close up, I mean, when they do even a little thing, it matters a lot, right? So influencing and helping them get stuff right really matters, even though they're having a hard time getting stuff right. And when you're close up, you know, it's both kind of discouraging, but it's also encouraging because some of the people are there for the right reasons. You know, some of those congressmen really are there and senators really are there to try to make things happen, and they're as frustrated as we are that it's as broken as it is.
All right. 3 years ago, you were involved in a debate of sorts involving the issue that we're discussing today. What happened?
Well, we're talking about when I Tam Credo and Joaquin Castro and I. So there was a TV debate about, I mean, I do this all the time. I go on TV and debate this issue. This was a sort of a high-profile one against a congressman who's opposed and a guy who was then the mayor of San Antonio, now a rising congressman who was on my team. We lost, but I think
it was close, though.
It was close.
Well, today you'll hear a lot more from our guest, Tamar Jacoby, at LSU Hill Memorial Library at 3:30, and you were in Baton Rouge, been here about a day. Is this your first trip here?
This is my first trip here.
Your early read. You're right on campus, aren't you?
Yeah. No, it's a great town. The Mississippi. It's very exciting to be right on the Mississippi. When I drove across the bridge yesterday just to see it, and then I drove back and drove across again. I mean, those of us who don't live on the Mississippi, you know, you all probably take it for granted, but it's pretty exciting for somebody from somewhere else.
We're glad you're here and look forward to hearing from you later today. Tamar Jacoby, thanks for the visit.
Thank you.
Thanks for your remarks. 297-5633. In a few moments, we'll hear from the Reverend Steve Crump, a man who's pastor at the Libertarian Church here in Baton Rouge. And also we'll hear from, if things go according to plan, from the Reverend David Diamond, who is with the Redeeming Word of Life Church. Different political and religious philosophies from these gentlemen. And we're going to talk about Bobby Jindal's remarks in California a few days ago. Last week at the Reagan Library, last Thursday, he, our governor, said that the president of the United States is depriving Americans of their religious liberty. Governor Jindal, like our guest Tamar, is an Ivy Leaguer, a graduate of Brown University, biology graduate, and he has said that we need to have the teaching of creationism in public schools in Louisiana because, quote, we need the best science to be taught. Now, this remark and others from conservatives finally inflamed the Yale-educated Pat Robertson enough, the famous televangelist who is approaching 84 years old, to go before his flock and say that Governor Jindal and others are off base on this topic and that it's hurting conservative and Republican electoral pursuits. Here is Reverend Robertson.
Bishop in the Middle Ages there, 1800 something, who added up the dates listed in Genesis, and he came up with the world had been around for 6,000 years. There ain't no way that's possible. You know, anybody that's in the oil business knows that he's drilling down. You drill down 2,000 2 miles, 3 miles, 4 miles underground. You're coming into all these layers that were laid down by the dinosaurs. And we have skeletons of dinosaurs that go back about 1.65 million years. And to say that it all came about in 6,000 years is just nonsense. And I think the time we come off of that stuff and say this isn't possible. And, but, I mean, so there was a Big Bang. So that doesn't mean it came spontaneously. Nobody knows what caused the Big Bang, but I say God did it. God's in charge of all this. God's in control, and he is the author of all life. But we've got to be realistic that the dating of Bishop Usher just doesn't comport with anything that is found in science. And, you know, you can't just totally deny the geological formations that are out there, the rock formations and all the things that go all over the world, especially the bones. And we have found a Pterosaurus rex out there in the Oregon or someplace, I mean, a full skeleton. And that baby was laid down about 65 million years ago. So, I mean, let's be real. Let's not make a joke of ourselves. But I don't believe in so-called evolution as is currently presented as non-theistic. I believe that God started it all, and he's in charge of all of it. But the fact that you have progressive evolution under his control, that doesn't hurt my faith at all. But this thing, you know, we just can't be playing this Usher. Bishop Usher, God bless him, rest his soul in peace. He was just all.
All right, Pat Robertson saying that he does not buy into the creation science version of biblical creation that would mean that the earth is about 6,000 years old. Reverend Crump, from the Unitarian Church of 32 years, the pastor of the church on Goodwood Boulevard. Do you have a newfound colleague and ally in Reverend Pat Robertson?
There are a couple of ministers serving in our church, Jim, and good morning. And the best part of that interview, well, let's get real. Can I do my buddy Romer imitation?
Sure.
Jim, I'm a Genesis guy. I just love the way Buddy Romer said that. I'm a Genesis guy. And God is another name for the Big Bang. I can't believe that clip, and I'm glad he's saying what he's saying. The Sumerians 6,000 years ago invented glue. So anybody wants to hold to the universe being a few thousand years old.
We're going to get to Governor Jindal, but Reverend Diamond has joined us from the Redeeming Word of Life Church, and he too, like our guest Steve Crump, has been around for well over 30 years in this community. Reverend Diamond, I don't know if you heard of all of Pat Robertson's remarks, but what's your take on whether the earth is 6,000 years old or millions and millions and millions of years old?
Well, Jim, good to be with you. I've always believed that Genesis 1 and 2, there's a lot of theories. Some call it the gap theory and what have you. But it's very plain. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was void and was out formed. Now, nowhere does it say in there how much time elapsed between Genesis 1 and 2.
297-5633 is your number. We'll be back with Reverend Steve Crump and Reverend David Diamond in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Reverend David Diamond, Reverend Steve Crump with us, and we're going to discuss religion and politics, two subjects they say you should stay away from. But Governor Jindal is diving right into this. Last week in California, he gave a, quote, big speech on religious liberty at a library for Ronald Reagan. And, of course, President Reagan was loved by many evangelical conservatives and rarely, if ever, went to church. But that's another issue. But the Pat Robertson thing, here's an email from Steve at Highland Coffee saying, oh, my God, Pat is making sense. it's kind of interesting, Steve Crump, that Pat Robertson is now in a place on the political scene that is to the left of Bobby Jindal.
It does sound that way, and I thought, Pastor Diamond, and a shout out to you, Pastor Diamond. I'm glad you're on the air. It sounds like you pretty much go along with the same position. Those of us who have studied Genesis pretty much have discovered it's not a science text, but probably a hymn. And you can actually look at the way the scripture is structured. It looks like a hymn. It's something that's sung in church. It's not biology 101. I think it's pretty interesting. Now, the governor, actually, I took a look at that speech, the entire text, and it appears that what he's really trying to talk about is abortion and gay marriage. And he's saying in so many words that this is an affront to religious freedom. Well, he and I will just disagree about that. I think it's a tempest in a teapot. And would Ronald Reagan have agreed with all of that as well? He might have been spinning in his grave over some of those things that Governor Jindal was saying. But we just have a difference of opinion. This Hobby Lobby case is going to the Supreme Court.
All right. Well, the political winds are quite often affected immensely by social issues. And Reverend Diamond, for example, we've talked many times through the years. My guess, Reverend Diamond, is that you would not be inclined to vote for somebody who does not share your Christian faith. Would that be accurate?
Yes, that's a pretty accurate assessment, Jim. When, you know, what we have in the White House now is absolute shame. He calls himself a Christian, and he's a liar. We know that just from his Obamacare statement. But when you get to a place, as Romans said, when you do not want to retain God in your knowledge, then God gives you over to a reprobate mind, a mind that's void of judgment. And so it boils down to the fact that it's more than a songbook, the Bible. It's a story. And one thing's for sure that everybody listening to this radio broadcast, and even Steve would agree, we all have one thing in common. We're all going to die. And we're going to find out if that book is true or not true.
Do you like Governor Jindal, Reverend Diamond?
I like a lot of his ways. There's some way, of course. I mean, I'm sure that I don't even like myself sometimes. So that don't. I think he's a good governor.
How about the religion of Bobby Jindal's parents? See, that's what I think. That's an affront. What if Bobby Jindal had all of the points of view that you have, but happened to be Hindu? What if he kept his Indian-given name and didn't change it to Bobby? I mean, this is the issue. I think is really bigotry. People have the right to have their own prejudices if to themselves and I guess in their churches. But when it comes to an issue of public policy and discrimination against women and discrimination against people who are made differently and love differently, but love, I think that's what the issue is, and we can see the trend in this country. We can read the polls. It looks like a political speech to me.
Well, the governor in his remarks in California said of John Adams a few things.
He said, Unitarian, as a matter of fact.
He says, John Adams says, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people.
Here's the thing that folks, let's say, on the far evangelical Christian right, what have you, need to acknowledge. They're talking about deists here. Deists did not even acknowledge the virgin birth of Christ. They did not acknowledge the resurrection of Christ. They're deists, the whole lot of them. And it's interesting that the governor chose those individuals. Thomas Jefferson, for example, edited the New Testament to take out the supernatural business because Jefferson was a deist. This country wasn't founded on Christianity.
Well, David Diamond, you believe fervently, I believe, unless your mind has been changed, that this is a Christian nation.
Well, absolutely. if you don't believe that, then why is it that every federal building in Washington, D.C. has scripture engraved on them? The very tallest building in Washington, D.C., the Washington Monument, and it's no coincidence that at the top of the monument, facing east, not west, south, or north, but east, and whence cometh our help, the Bible talks, that in praise be to God, Los Deo.
This is the deist
so
language.
Why is it the founding fathers, and there was only one deist that signed the Constitution. And so here we are, we've been established as a Christian nation that believed that God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten son. But if it was left up to this president, they would go down and destroy all the buildings in Washington.
Oh, my goodness. Let's leave. it's just perfectly laughable. George Washington, let's talk about him, said in the Treaty of Tripoli, the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion. So let's attack George Washington if we want to hate presidents. No, I don't think our republic is in jeopardy. But we have to acknowledge our own bigotries and our own prejudices, our own particularity in our religions, but not make it public policy.
Well, could an atheist get elected president of the United States? Jesse Ventura is an atheist. He says he may run.
Sure.
Edwin Edwards has been on this show a few times in recent years and more or less indicates that he's an agnostic or atheist. He may run for Congress. Will we elect somebody who is a non-believer?
I think in time that probably will happen. The last Unitarian who didn't believe in the virgin birth was William Howard Taft. They made a big bathtub for him, and there he was. I mean, the Republic didn't fall in shambles. So there we are. I think it's a matter of polling. But to call this a Christian nation would be to deny all the minority religions here in this country. This is the most religious country on the planet.
Right, and it's a country with a lot of religions, some of which are not Christian.
Absolutely.
But why is Christmas Day celebrated as a federal and state holiday?
We talked about that the last time. That's secular religion that's part of our culture. That's why we get the day off. We would pick some holiday to
No, it's to more off. Than that, and you know that. It's about the birth of Jesus Christ.
I think
it is a celebration of Christianity.
You've gone by the storefronts. Nobody has stopped at the storefronts and prayed at the nativity scene. No, they go in and buy their perfumes and their clothing and do their Christmas shopping. It's a secular holiday. In God we trust is the language of secular religion
well,
in America.
Well, I would say that there are some who passionately disagree with you, Reverend Crump, including David Diamond. Is Christmas a secular holiday, David Diamond?
Yeah, no, it's not a secular holiday. You know, and that's what's so sad about the other side. They want to say they're right on every single issue when they ignore the very facts that are blatantly right in our face. And let me just say this. No, this is not a Christian nation anymore. We're far from it. This nation is turning into another Sodom and Gomorrah, by the way, which the Bible said would happen before Jesus returns.
Well, why do you not believe the president is a Christian? He says he's a Christian. Shouldn't we give him the same benefit of the doubt we gave Ronald Reagan?
Absolutely.
No, because when the Bible says, let every man be a liar, but God be true. And when you start calling the Bible a lie, then you're calling God a liar.
I thought it says judge not,
so therefore,
lest he be judged.
You are a liar, not God. God is truth. And we know President Barack Obama is a liar because you can keep your own doctor. You will not lose your coverage. At least Bill Clinton had the backbone to get up and announce to the entire world that he was a pervert and that he violated his wife and his daughter's trust Barack Obama, he's never wrong about anything. It's us.
All right. Well, the Reverend Diamond is being provocative, as he often is, Reverend Crump. But my guess is that he speaks for a lot of people in this state and in this country, many of whom vote, and many of whom voted for Governor Bobby Jindal. What do you think?
It does me no injury for my neighbor. Say there are 20 gods or no god, it neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg. That's Thomas Jefferson speaking. He has a right to his opinion, and we go on and have national elections, and I think it's clear who won the second time. So this is a political discussion, unfortunately. We're not talking about the Beatitudes. We're not talking about blessed are the poor. We're not talking about the 400,000 people who don't have insurance in this state. Nothing was mentioned of the Beatitudes, and the Beatitudes from on the mounts or on the plain are listed twice. So if we want to spout religion, let's at least acknowledge the teachings of Christ, and also acknowledge the poor amongst us and what we're supposed to be doing. I mean, I try to be a Christian, but there's so many groupies and followers that get in the way.
Are you a Christian?
I'm trying to be that early church Christian. It's the creeds and the followers, the perversions of churches and clergy and the Crusades, for example, that get in the way for me.
Have you gone all the way to say I am a Christian?
Because of the lapel touting hatred that many Christians spout, I don't want to associate with that. Can you blame me?
Yeah, but they're libertarians, Unitarians and libertarians I disagree with, but I don't paint it with a broad brush.
I want to be a lowercase c, because that capital C is just getting in the way of the true Jesus.
Okay, Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. Paul, you're on the air with Reverend Crump and Reverend Diamond. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Jim. Another great subject, only on the Jim Inkster Show. Question, just put yourself in this predicament. If Christianity was the founding nature of this country, which I think freedom was, how could... And right is right no matter what date of time. How could the founding fathers agree with slavery, which we know is wide and rampant, and which some knew were wrong at the time? How could slavery fit into the design of a Christian country on the basis? And I think the Constitution is a wonderful thing because it gave an out for slavery. It gave it out. It weaved it out. But everybody was supposed to be Christian in the founding fathers, but slavery existed wide and rampant.
All right. What about, thank you, Paul. David Diamond, what about the founding fathers having slaves? How could they be Christians and have slaves?
Well, Jim, truth comes to the forefront. There's a lot of things you read from the very beginning in the scriptures that when knowledge came available, things changed and lined up with the scriptures. There's a lot of Christians who believe things that are not biblically based because of a tradition or a religion, and it's not scriptural because they don't read the truth.
All right, but I think Paul makes a good point that if these founding fathers were so wise with the Constitution, and most of us think it's a pretty good document, they certainly were unwise about supporting and advancing slavery.
Absolutely, and it underscores the fallibility of human beings. There's not a religion around that is infallible. Not a religion, because they're all man-made. They're created. Did Jesus create Christianity? No, he was a Jew. Others, followers, gave him a tradition. So, yes, all religions must fall under scrutiny, and all have their sins, all have their blind spots and their shadows, including my own.
Well, I think Reverend Diamond would quite likely agree with you, and I'll let him respond, but I recall the Reverend Diamond being critical of Jimmy Swaggart on occasion, a man who is a Christian. You sometimes are critical of people who are religious evangelistic people like you, and sometimes who are in the pulpit like you, Reverend Diamond.
Yes, Jim, without getting into a deep discussion, that's the reason God always had prophets. is the prophets had to come and rebuke and straighten out some of God's shepherds. Anybody can get off base. It's not how you start. It's how you finish it.
All right. Evan in Mid-City, we'll slide you in. Evan, you're on with Reverend Diamond and Reverend Crump. Hi, Evan.
Hi. I have a question. I wanted to know, get the thoughts on when you allow politics to, your religion to drive your politics when you're elected official, you know, where do you draw the line?
Where do you draw the line if you let religion get into politics, Reverend Diamond?
I don't know if I think that if you we would have a great government if we governed according to the Book of Proverbs, which covers every facet of life.
How about love thy neighbor? That would be a good way of governing.
Absolutely, love
all
thy
people.
Neighbor.
There you go. All right. Well, hey, we agree on something. And the creation and the Big Bang.
And
we agree on that,
enemies.
Too.
All right.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Reverend Crump. Thank you, David Diamond. Always a pleasure.
Okay,
and,
Jim.
And belated happy birthday, the man born on the same day as Ronald Reagan and Jay Darden. David
Thank
Diamond.
You.
Thank you, sir. And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, keep listening. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.